Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I connect with Kyle Burrell, one of my mastermind peers, and we have a lot of fun talking school leadership as always. We hit on it's better to make the wrong decision than no decision at all, where Kyle's I'll figure out how to make it happen attitude originated from, and how success comes from integrity and caring for other people. I never take for granted that you're listening, so thanks so much for tuning in and enjoy the show. Hey, Better Leaders, I am so pumped to be connected with today's guest and bringing you to her or her to you, vice versa. I'm talking with Kyle Burrell, and she's a principal at the charter school or at a charter school in Austin, Texas. Her school currently serves 600 students in grades pre-K through 8. She received her bachelor's degree from University of Arizona in Tucson and then her master's in education leadership from the University of Texas at Tyler. She started out her career in education as a 4-5 grade science teacher, then spent 2 years as an AP before moving into the role of campus principal. She's currently in her 5th year as a campus principal. Her favorite part of her job is greeting her students as they arrive to school each day. That's mine too, Kyle. And spending time in the classrooms. Kyle, thanks for joining me on the show.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Daniel.
Oh, this is the best. So, Kyle, I see the University of Arizona Wildcats. We've got the connection to UConn. I was at the game last night against University of Houston. And were you at University of Arizona? This is not how to start an interview, by the way. Were you there when they played U of I in March Madness?
You know, I have to admit, I'm really embarrassed. Like, okay. I love to have school spirit, but I know almost nothing about sports. And so
this is awesome.
Arizona's a great, they were supposed to have a great basketball team, but when we got there, and when I say we, my husband and I, because we met there, but he was super into basketball, chose the school because of basketball. I could have cared less. I chose it because it was somewhat close to home, but far enough that it wasn't right in my back door. And our basketball team was horrible almost our entire time through college. And so I know he felt really disappointed because he was like, I'm in a Pac-10 school. So excited. Yeah. And our team just didn't perform for us.
Oh, no. So, yeah, I mean, I can't remember what year this was. I think this is when I went back to graduate school. So I want to say like 05, 06, and U of I played Arizona. We were just getting crushed by like 20-something points. We were playing in the Chicago Stadium where the Bulls play, and somehow we channeled the aura of Michael Jordan, and we came on this massive comeback that is like for the record books and somehow squeaked out a win. It's like one of the best March Madness games ever. I'm glad you don't remember it because I was worried that this would have been the shortest podcast ever at 3 minutes.
Well, I will say that kind of makes me think of the recent victory the Patriots had at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. That was an incredible game. Okay, so since we made it through that challenging question and we'll continue with the podcast, what inspired you to pursue a career in the education?
Oh man, I was that kid, that stereotypical kid that played school with all of her toys. And actually, I had a teacher.
What toys specifically?
Barbies, G.I. Joes for my brother. I have plenty of toy horses, and they could be students in classrooms. I mean, anything that could sit or stand and be taught fakely, I would do. And I had a teacher that, and I would do it to my friends too. They'd come over and I'd make them be students and I would teach them. And one of my teachers, when I was like in second grade, allowed us to make quizzes and she would actually give them to the class. Like if you made a quiz, she'd give it to the class. So I would spend so long making these quizzes and getting them like typed up on my mom's computer. She'd print it out for me and I'd bring it so proud to my teacher. Can we give my quiz to the class? Such a nerd. I just love that stuff. And funny enough, being that kid who just loved doing all that stuff, I graduated valedictorian from my high school. I was in Wickenburg, go Wranglers, and went on to college. And I was fully intending to be an education major, but I'd come from kind of a small school. And I had taken physics my senior year and calculus. I tested into calculus. And so it made sense to me to take calculus, and it made sense to me to take physics. And so I took those classes regardless of any major that was declared and became a physics major. Yeah, it was, and you know, I love calculus and I love physics because I love the way that that math can actually predict real world occurrences. I think that's kind of just blew my mind when I was in high school. But as I was taking all of these really high level math and science classes, I was like, these are really interesting and I really enjoy them, but I don't want to be a scientist.
Uh-oh.
And so I worked for a soil scientist over the summer. I tutored his two daughters in math and science, and I did soil tests for his engineering company. And I thought, wow, that was really cool. So I went back to school and became a soil science major, which also was not what I wanted to do. And I think I might have broken my father's heart because he was in construction.
Yeah.
He really wanted me to be a soil science major. Not in the cards, though, unfortunately. And I came home and I eventually said, you know what? I've been going through this whole college experience and I think it's time that I go back to being an elementary education major. Pretty sure I broke my parents' heart that night a little bit because I think they saw me as having so many opportunities. But the reality in Arizona was that a lot of teachers made very little money, much less than even I make in than we make in Texas. And they just, I don't know, you know, they were so excited. I was the first kid to go to college. My older brother skipped out on the college experience and I was going to be a teacher. But, you know, it all worked out. I moved to Austin, Texas. I started teaching fourth and fifth grade science that same year, got some eighth grade science thrown in November, unexpectedly. And I rolled with it. And I don't know that I was the best teacher that year, but I worked really hard and I learned a lot. And that was, I mean, that's where I started. And I'm so glad I ended up in education.
So did you say November is when you started teaching eighth grade science?
Yeah. So I was in a weird position. I started off teaching fourth and fifth grade science. And I took over all the fourth and fifth grade science teachers while one teacher was out on maternity leave. When she came back, she took over most of the classes back. And I stayed with fourth grade and helped and then was helping out in a few other areas. Being a charter school, we wear a lot of hats. And so I spent a lot of time with some special education students. I spent a lot of time in a variety of classrooms. And then in November, my principal asked me if I would take over eighth grade biology, which was an advanced level course. And it wasn't my comfort zone because I mentioned my love of physics, but I did not mention my love of biology. And that would be for a reason. I love the mathematical side of science, yeah, but the life science side never really interested me that much. But I did it and I survived it. And my kids actually, I mean, they were great kids. And so we learned together that year.
So I'm curious, like, what is it about you and your personality? What experiences did you go through, or what skills, I guess, do you possess to kind of be able to roll with the punches, so to speak? Because, you know, I don't want to just say teachers. I think administrators, just human beings in general, are very much like structure and routine and that sort of thing. And so to switch gears from 4 or 5 science to eighth grade in November, for some people, that might be really, really challenging. But it sounds like you handled it pretty well. And I'm just curious, you know, what it is about Kyle that helped you succeed in that situation.
You know, I've never really thought about that. I think that I'm a barber, and barbers, I feel like, keep pushing forward. My dad's art barber, and it's kind of a big deal in Wickenburg, Arizona. Not that anybody will probably ever go there. But, you know, I feel like we have a heart of perseverance and a kind of can-do attitude. I think that, you know, it's not really an option of I can't, I'll figure out a way, I'll make it happen. But I think I also, on the other side of that, as much as I might feel that I am persistent, I was surrounded by some really neat people. My principal that year was really encouraging and he really believed in me. And in a way that he also kind of opened it up that, you know, like, I'm here to support you, not just to, you know, put you in a position you're going to feel uncomfortable in. And the teacher that I was doing maternity leave for before she left, I think she initiated me well. I showed up to the classroom. There were no chairs. There were no tables at all. Empty classroom. Mm. Had some cabinets. And I was like, oh. And she goes, yes, school starts in 2 days and the furniture has not yet arrived. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, I think it'll get here. And it did. The day before school started, it arrived, but it was not all put together. And this woman, who is 8 months pregnant, put together all of this furniture with my assistants. And we're like carrying it to the classroom. And I'm like, you should stop carrying this. You need to hold that baby in.
Yeah.
And I will carry it myself. But no, she was just a real go-getter. And so I think that was my first experience and person that I met. And that really, I think, set the stage for, like, we make things happen and we do what's right.
Wow. I like that story a lot. We make things happen and we do it right. What a powerful attitude to have. And just figuring out, like you said, I'll figure out how to make it happen type of attitude. It's served you so well so far. In addition to that quality of you, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
I entered leadership in an unconventional way. That same principle that I said had faith in me and, you know, helped me out. He called me in on the last day of school and I was thinking, oh man, I had dress code Daniel. I had purple hair. It was field day. I was wearing shorts. I was thinking, oh no, he's going to tell me he doesn't want me back because I'm at dress code. I got purple hair. This is crazy. And he actually said, you know, we're interested in you continuing to teach science for us next year, but also in helping out with our dean of students with student discipline for our campus. And I said, well, that's very nice of you. I think I really was quite fond of our dean of students and was excited of the opportunity to work closer with him while teaching. And I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. And that summer, we were getting ready for the start of the school year. And my principal told me that our dean of students had gotten, there had been some hangups and some things, and he wasn't going to be coming back, but that we might be expecting him for second semester. And he asked that in the interim, I be our assistant principal, our dean of students, as a second year teacher and teach science to my kiddos. And it was kind of shocking and it was kind of scary. But I just remember him telling me, Kyle, I know that, you know, you're going to make some mistakes. And I know that everything is new. But I want you to know that it's better when faced with a decision you have to make the decision, and even for it to be wrong, than to not make a decision at all. And so, you know, he kind of just breathed some like life into me of saying, you know, you can do this. And I know that there are times when you might not do it right, but I want you to do it and learn from it and grow from it and become better for it. And so as I've developed my leadership style, I feel like I think a lot of him. I get to see him. He still works for our charter system. Not super close, but I do get to see him on occasion. I've always appreciated, he always gives me the best pep talks and pushes me forward. So I think about how he gave me the autonomy that I needed to grow and even to fail and move forward. And I hope that that's something that in my leadership style, I'm still developing. I went from somebody who was super focused on the rules and the handbook and the guidelines when I first started to really seeing all of those gray areas and those dynamics and the human side of leadership.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, leadership is complex. It is definitely gets murky and muddy. It is not black and white. And that style does not work for me at all. It never has. And it causes conflict. But what a gift that he gave you in terms of encouragement, affirmations, pep talks, but the gift of autonomy and the gift of being able to fail. And the fact that you can make wrong decisions better than no decision at all, because that's really the best teacher. And my first year as principal, bumps and bruises along the way all the time. You know, I've made mistakes for sure, and a lot of them. But those, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't change anything I ever did, because those were my best learning moments. I never would have learned very high level aspects of the role just being told. It's something you got to go through.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And so like you said, you know, better to make a wrong decision than no decision at all. Let's talk about your worst leadership mistake and what you learned from it.
I've made plenty of mistakes. So there are lots of mistakes I could talk about. But I think last year I kind of faced my biggest, what I felt like was my biggest failure, especially in the moment. And honestly, now I'm so thankful for it, because I feel like I'm so much of a better person because I experienced what I experienced last year. But I moved to a new campus, and the campus was very different from the one I had started at. I started a campus that was, we were K through 8, and we had about 540 kids. We had 40% Title I. We were always just barely making it to be able to get our Title I funding every year. We had some ESL kiddos, but overall, like, our school is pretty high performing. And I moved in that campus. I had started out with everyone that was there with me. They were the people that I was either hired with or that I had a hand in hiring. And I had gotten to know them over several years. We had developed trust. But to be honest with you, Daniel, I don't know what I was doing. I didn't know at the time what I was doing to develop those relationships. And then I'd been there for 3 years as campus principal before I moved to the campus that I'm at now last year. And I came into that campus just expecting to kind of keep on going and carry on. And I didn't take the time to get to know the people in the campus that I was moving on to. I think I just kind of, like, you know, just picked myself up, dropped myself there, and just kept moving forward by myself, unfortunately. And it was hard. Relationally, I didn't know what I had done to have good relationships. I had great relationships with my staff at my first school. And I was just dumbfounded. Like, oh my goodness, what am I doing that I don't have these solid relationships? Why is it that these people don't trust me? And it was because I hadn't done anything to earn their trust. But you know what, from that time of not taking the time to respect where I was coming in at and to learn and to be a part of the team, I spent my whole summer last summer looking at ways to build relationships, ways to build trust, ways to better my own communication with my team. And I came back this year ready to, you know, face that. I jumped in at the very beginning of the year and I called myself out in a moment of vulnerability with my team. And I said, guys, I know where I was last year, and I want you to know that that's not where I am this year, and that this is where my heart's at. And you know, we're gonna be really with you. We're gonna be together. We're gonna be in classrooms together. There are kids, and we're in this together.
And I want to cut you off for a second. I need to know, what was the catalyst to be vulnerable like that? Because that's huge, and I'm so proud of you for doing that. And I'm sure it added so much credibility and trust. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I need to know. The listeners need to know, why did you make that choice?
I had done a lot of soul searching, and you know, I just joined the mastermind towards the end of last school year. And I know, like, one of the first groups that I, or one of the first nights that we were on, one of our members, Colin, just being really vulnerable with our group and just, you know, like having him have that opportunity. I mean, I didn't even really know him at the time, but I had so much respect for him in that moment. And I mean, I still feel a lot of that respect for him that I developed just in that first night of even meeting him.
Wow.
And from there, I, you know, learned from Roxana about the School Reform Initiative.
Yep.
And I found a training that was on Essential Friends Group, which is a coaching model that kind of, I feel like it's kind of like PLC that would almost be like our masterminds. I really like the idea of it. I haven't rolled it out for my staff yet. I think that I want my teachers to make PLCs what they need them to be, but I want that as an option for sure. And through that, we talked a lot about, you know, connecting, developing relationships, and vulnerability. And I know I did another professional development called Empathy School, and that really focused on, well, empathy and education. I think that's been a big thing, especially lately. So from all of those experiences and just from connecting with other professionals, I felt, and I read the book Mindset. Sorry, that was probably the other aspect of it. So all of those things kind of came together for me to start the school year off and kind of be like, I know this is where I was, but this doesn't have to be where I stay, and I'm going to be better for it. And honestly, I know if I hadn't had that year last year, that I wouldn't be doing all the things I'm doing now. So I'm really thankful for the failure, but it hurt so bad going through it. It was a really hard year.
I can't imagine, but thanks for sharing that story. I'm, like I said, super proud of you sharing that, you know, vulnerable time with your staff. And I wish I was there to see it, you know, to say this is who I was, but not where I, you know, not where I'm headed, not where I am right now. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall and then see how the teachers react. And then to see you live that out, right? Put your money where your mouth is and live that out every single day. That's good stuff. That's really, really good. You know, we read Miracle Morning. I don't know if that impacted you or not, but I am curious. In addition to that, you know, what does the first hour of your day look like? Just curious. Do you have some type of morning routine or ritual, or is it still in development, or what's that look like?
Well, you know, I was the worst during that Miracle Morning book. You're like, how's the Miracle Morning going, everyone? I was like, I just don't think today is the day to start. And, you know, through the whole book, it says, like, no time to start. Just start tomorrow. Just start tomorrow. And I was like, nah, I'm moving. I'll start after we move.
Right.
And then I was like, okay, maybe I'll just try 30 minutes. And it was after kind of really focusing and talking about affirmations. And so I started with just getting up 30 minutes early, and that I liked it so much that 30 minutes just wasn't going to be enough time. So I had to do the full hour. And I'm so glad I do. I get up at 4 a.m. every single morning, Monday through Friday. I don't get up that early on the weekends. Don't have to. But I get up at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
I do 25 minutes on my elliptical, which I'm super glad that it's not just being a really expensive clothes hanger in our house. I do about 10 minutes or so of Duolingo, where I practice my Spanish because
nice.
I have a large population of Spanish speakers at my school.
Bravo.
So it's something I've been working on. And I do about 10 minutes of meditation and then 5 minutes of positive affirmations and about 5 minutes of writing. Writing's probably the area I'm still working on the most.
Okay.
But man, I love my mornings and I look forward to them. Like I wake up usually at like 3:58. My alarm doesn't even have to go off because I'm like ready to go.
What time are you going to bed most nights?
8:39. I have two toddlers. And so we put them to bed around 7:30, 8 o'clock, depending on the night. And in order for then me to get everything I need done for the night and get to bed, that's usually around 8:30 or 9 o'clock.
Gotcha. Affirmations, did you write your own or are you stealing somebody's or a combo?
A combination. Well, mostly just stealing from a lot of different sources. I have one of the affirmations that Hal Elrod from Miracle Morning put on his site that I really like, which is really focusing on the fact that success won't come to you without integrity and the focus on caring for other people and that, you know, really bringing that in. And then I just recently went to a Jim Knight professional development where we were talking about his new book, Better Conversations. And I've been adding in to my affirmation some of the core beliefs that he lists in that book about how like and I truly believe these things, but I feel like the more I say them, the more I participate in these, like the aspect of valuing listening and being a great listener is something that I feel like I need to work on. So I've been saying that one a lot as well.
Wow, that's powerful. And okay, are you using an app for meditation or what does that look like?
I've used a few different apps because meditation is super new to me. I've used a couple different guided meditation apps and I kind of used all the free stuff in them and then moved on to another one and used all the free stuff. And I found one that was the least expensive one. And that's the one that I'm now pursuing because I did actually purchase it so that I have open more content. Reading Search Inside Yourself has helped me to maybe build up a little bit of my confidence of doing it without the guided app. But I like having kind of that structure reminding me if my mind wanders to come back because sometimes I don't catch it first. Sometimes that brings me back.
Thanks for sharing on that first hour of the day. It's good to hear, you know, that it's hit and like, that's crazy. You're waking up at 3:58 without even an alarm because it's been working for you so well. That's awesome. Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free year-round fundraising program for schools. And the best part is that it's absolutely free. With School Spirit Vending, we do all the work. You just cash a check. You can increase school spirit with custom stickers for your school and raise funds at the same time. No upfront costs, no volunteers, no selling. Sick of the same old ways of raising money for your school? Check out schoolspiritvending.com. Before we started recording, you know, you were talking about the challenges of your school and where your kids are coming from. And it's just a reality, right? And they don't always necessarily score the highest on assessments, but you've seen tremendous growth from last year to this year, which was amazing to hear about. But you also talked about how you wish, you know, you could tell the school's story more or just share more about school successes. So maybe you could define that for us, what success of a school looks like to you, and use this as a platform to talk about all the great things you're doing. We'd love to hear.
Our school is 90% Title I, 63% LEP, with the majority of that being Spanish language speaking parents. And man, if you met our kids, you'd be so impressed with them. We have amazing kids and we have amazing families that bring their kiddos to our school. And you know, they choose to bring their kids to our school. They choose to sit in traffic while they drive their kid to school every single day because they want their child to have a different opportunity than will be provided just in where they're districted at. You know, being from a charter school, school choice is a big part of who we are. I feel like taking that into account, like we know we have tried so hard to provide things for our students as much as possible. We've had dental screenings come on campus. We had that worked with different health insurances as well as accepted Medicaid. So students could actually get their dental cleanings twice a year while at school. Their parents just had to sign off for it. We've had Vision for Kids, a company that comes and provides glasses for children, come out and do vision screenings and then provide glasses to kids. I had kids walked away same day with a pair of glasses in their hand that didn't have them prior to, that needed them, and really trying to meet our kiddos' needs where they're at. On top of that, like our teachers, oh, I think that we just do amazing work. I love the school that I came from, but I feel like at the school that we're at now, there's so much more opportunity that we have because we have this precious, precious time during the day where our kids are with us and we have the opportunity to impact them in so many ways. And it's hard work. The scores have been disheartening at times, but we've seen a lot of growth. We've seen our kiddos take the NWA MAP test, which is a percentile ranking. And so generally speaking, when your kids take it in fall and when they take it in winter, they're taking the test the same as other kids that are taking the test having gone through school. So the expectation is that by the time you've made it through a semester of school that you have, you know, grown to some extent. An NWA MAP sets up like a growth standard that they think that the kids should meet this. I know I was talking today with one of my fourth grade math teachers who's just amazing. And I pointed at it to her and I said, I want you to look at this because right here, this dot right here is where your growth measure was supposed to be. And do you see the bar that's like way above that dot? That's where your growth measure is at for your kids. She had 150% growth in our fourth grade math score. From fall to winter. And I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, Daniel, the scores, when you look at kind of like the more standardized type tests, they don't look great, but I know our kids are growing and I know we're growing them above what we need to be. Like, I know we're going to close that gap. Yeah. It's going to take time, but we're going to get there. And I think that it's really exciting to see these small wins along the journey. And I mean, that's really the goal, is that we're moving our kids forward and that we're providing them with every opportunity to excel. And so I think it is stressful and it is hard. And my teachers work so hard. And I know, you know, all teachers work hard, but I see the work that they do. And I think that they really should be commended. And they need these small wins because I know that they see the standardized scores come back too. And it's hard.
Wow. That's a lot of cool stuff that you're doing for sure. You know, and little lost for words to hear, you know, just about your successes. It's really neat to see and unpack that, you know, for the listeners. I'm curious too, you know, before we started recording the podcast, you talked about staff meetings and kind of what makes them, I guess, your take. You said it wasn't necessarily like groundbreaking, but there's little things that you do that you'd love our listeners to hear.
So this year we started doing starting our meetings off with what we call a do now activity, which is kind of like, you know, if your kids come into class, they sit down, they do a warm up or a bell ringer. And we just happen to call ours a do now. And I tended to be like the kind of person that just always liked to project it up on the PowerPoint or something. But I decide, I don't want to do that because then all that's going to be projected on my PowerPoint is that. And while they're working on it, I really wanted to do pictures that were kind of rotating through that we had taken in their classrooms. And so we do that. We take kind of me and my admin team and other people, we take pictures of different things happening at school. And then I put them all on and play them as a slideshow as people are walking in. The do now is posted right at the door. And it says, I always put it up in, you know, kind of like a 1, 2, 3 step order. And it'll be like, think about this, write about this. Number 3, turn it into the black bin. And I had some teachers that were like, oh, I think it would be helpful if there was some more color on this. It would help me really differentiate the different steps if they were different colors. And so it's like, got your feedback. Next time I had different colors. I have one person come up and say, it really helped me as an ESL learner if you would put us some sentence stems that we might be able to use. So in a chuckle, I did that as well. I put up some sentence stems and it's kind of evolved. And now I provide all of these things attached to our do nows that we do, as well as usually an example of my own on there to show them what's looking like. Several of my teachers will get all the things they need and they'll take a picture of the do now and then bring it to their seat so that they can look back at the directions, which I just think is awesome. And I think that's another way that we sometimes think about, you know, kids bringing technology into the classroom. Well, if they were doing it to help them remember what to do, wouldn't you want them to be able to do that?
Oh, yeah.
But that's another conversation entirely. So we've done during these do nows, it's always something related to what we're talking about. We always have something that we're focusing on, or it's something that's kind of just to kind of bond us and bring us together. For Valentine's Day, we did hearts and everybody drew a random name and they didn't get to choose. They had to draw who they drew and that's who they had to write about. And they had to write something they either appreciated or valued about that person. And it was all of our staff members. It was our front office. It was our nurse. It was our teachers, our aides, everyone. And we posted those all up in our lobby for our kids to see. Last semester, we did acrostic poems, and our teachers did acrostic poems of their last names or their first names, some of them. Like Miss AJ did all about Justin Timberlake, and so that's all I remember about her now. Not all, but it comes to mind every time I see her.
Yeah.
But when we did that, our kids were like glued to our lobby reading these things all about their teachers. They were so excited. I had students walking up to me, can I write an acrostic poem? Absolutely. Here's some paper and some markers. And then our social studies teacher actually used it to have the kids write acrostic poems that were way better and way more intense than any of our teachers about the medieval times class systems and different interactions within that, which was really neat to see posted up in the hallway after that. And so I've loved seeing the kids get involved in that. So I think it's a nice time for us to either get together and think or kind of share a part of ourselves with our students in a different way. And I think that it also reminds us, we did one last semester where I wrote our entire Do Now in Spanish and I planned it out. I had help with translation to make sure I did it properly and posted it all up. And I had written down some phrases that I would use if teachers asked for help in English, then my responses to them were still in Spanish. So like one of my responses was, you know, like, you know, read it. And another one was, well, you can ask a friend, but they were in Spanish. And so if my teachers didn't, but I used gestures and kind of like motioned over and pointed at people because I feel like that's what we do in the classroom. Mm-hmm. When a kiddo who doesn't speak English asks us for help, we respond to them in English and then we try to use some gestures. And so I was trying to put them back in the shoes of their students for a moment. And, you know, as adults, we've developed some patterns relating to language, but our kids haven't necessarily developed all of those patterns that are so quick for us. So if it took us that long to figure that out, you know, imagine what it's like for the kiddo in your class that came in as a newcomer and doesn't speak any English. So that's, we always have like a goal and kind of like a learning experience together.
What I like about that story is that you're modeling, you know, for your teachers, what you want to see probably in classes and your adaptability and personalizing what they need. So you're very responsive to your staff as learners. And then to proudly display their work started to spread around the school that the kids got curious about it and wanted to produce stuff that was just as interesting. And in the social studies example, even better. So way to inspire the school that way. That's neat to see how the idea spreads by first starting with your staff and seeing that trickle down to the students as well. So, Kyle, you know, we talked about a few books that we read in The Mastermind, Miracle Morning, and Search Inside Yourself. But what's one book you think every principal should read right now and why?
Essentialism. Absolutely essentialism. If you read the book Essentialism, you'll see in the very beginning these two circles. One of them looks like a sun with arrows going out all over it, very short. The other one looks like a circle with one arrow pointing straight up for the further length. And I feel like I am that person that wants to take on everything and do everything and get super jazzed about everything. And that book has really helped me remember to rein it in and focus and actually do less but better.
Yeah, Essentialism's huge. We read that in the Mastermind too, and I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it so much. What do you do for fun, Kyle?
Right now I chase around two toddlers. We adopted both of our children through foster care, and that was a journey in and of itself. Before we did that, I rode horses. I still have my horses, kind of, but I don't see them very frequently because I feel like I spend all of my free time enjoyably with my toddlers, who are 3.5 and 2.5. Our son, oh man, I mean, I don't know if this is necessarily fun, but like, I feel like everything he does brings me such joy because he's healthy right now. Because he, when we got him at 2 months, we were told that everything was normal and fine. But at around 4 months, he had a lot of difficulty eating and he wasn't eating. And, you know, we went through a lot of illness with him and he was sick and he needed surgery. And, you know, we're two surgeries later and he's, oh my God, I cannot tell you how much joy I find just watching him be healthy and happy. And so I know like it doesn't sound like fun, but like he's still got some like things that he's working on and he has some delays and he just started PPCD this year. So he's officially in school and he rides a bus. He's 3.5, Daniel. He rides a bus to school in the mornings. Nice. But like, I just can't share enough how much joy that brings me. I mean, my daughter brings me tons of joy as well, but like the health thing has just been huge for us. We are so blessed. We have two healthy children and that makes me the luckiest girl alive.
Wonderful. I love it. I love it. If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Oh, communication. Absolutely communication. I think it was said best at one of the PDs I went to recently that we live in a world where there are so many ways to connect with people. I mean, you know, there's social media, there's email, phone, text messaging, everything in the world that you can help people connect with. Yet within our world, we have a growing and growing population of people who have never felt more lonely. And I think a big part of that is when we put things out there, everything you post publicly is, you know, the things that you're excited about or you're proud of. And so you're judging yourself and maybe even your struggles or your difficulties based on assuming that everyone else is living a perfect life. But that's just the perfect life that we're all showing. And I think that that's something that...
No, communication and being automatically good at something.
Oh, I think I got off topic. What was the question?
It's all good.
Oh, yeah. Communication-wise, I wish I had finished that thought. But communication, for sure.
If you could put a message on all school marquees across our nation for one day, what would it say?
It's probably too long for a marquee, but it's my favorite quote. And don't ask me who said it because I won't remember off on my feet. But it's, the time will never be just right. Start where you stand and use whatever tools you have at your command. And better tools will be found along the way.
Yeah, that's good. As an activator from the StrengthFinders 2.0 book, you know, I like that. It always aggravates me when people are waiting analysis paralysis and just trying to learn a little bit more before making that decision, even a wrong decision. So I like that the time will never just be right. Basically, make that choice, move forward now. So Kyle, you made it. I'm proud of you. This is the last question and you are familiar with it, but you are building the school from the ground up. You're not limited by the budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school and what would be your top three priorities?
I feel like I would prioritize one, hiring faculty. I think teachers make the biggest difference on a campus. They're the ones with our kids every day and throughout the day. And I want teachers who will be joyful, caring, firm, and hold those high expectations, even when others might not see the need for those high expectations. I think that sometimes we subconsciously or even unknowingly lower those expectations. And so I think that it starts with faculty, staff. From there, man, you know, being a charter school facilities has been the one thing that's been the hardest part because we don't have facilities funding as a charter. And on top of that, like we're paying mortgages. We're usually like in refurbished old buildings. So I would say I would just really love, honestly, this is just me in my own world. I would love to have a gymnasium, an outdoor field for soccer. I would love to have a playground, which knock on wood, I'm hoping to have a nice playground for next year, and a cafeteria. Those would be, and I know that those things sound normal, but trust me, when you're in a charter school, these things are not all normal and they're not all the same. And I think then I'd probably also definitely have like an auditorium as well, because I think as much as we need our students to be learning all of the core subjects, I feel like our students need to be also learning those communication skills, presentation skills, participating in productions, all of those aspects. So I think those would be my priorities.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I don't think I have any words of advice other than get connected. There we go. Actually, I do have advice. Get connected if you're not on Twitter, if you're not doing those things, because those things changed my world in a very real way. They changed my world for the better. And I am on Twitter at Kyle Burrell, and I'm on Instagram as Principal Burrell. And so I love getting connected with other leaders. I love getting connected with teachers and seeing what we're doing. I share a lot of pictures and just things that are going on in our campus. So I love when other people share similar things and good ideas. Sharing is caring.
That's right. Sharing is caring. So Better Leaders, thank you so much for investing in your time today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Kyle. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Kyle in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Kyle, thanks for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Great. Thank you so much, Daniel. It was great.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show?
Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.